8 days out from the Bash in Berlin, and SmackDown tonight, not a bad show, a very average show. It was a show that was built around Cody Rhodes and Kevin Owens and the storyline of whether or not Kevin Owens could be trusted. Would Kevin Owens turn on Cody Rhodes as he has turned on so many other people over the years? In fact, I had a whole video package tonight recapping all of the betrayals of Kevin Owens. Would he or would he not? That was the question going into the main event tonight, which was Cody and KO taking on Grayson Waller and Austin Theory. Perennial losers here on SmackDown. That's all they do. That's what they're here for. They show up and they lose, but they serve a purpose, but they still lose. Kevin Owens is going into this WWE Championship match next weekend with a little bit of intrigue as far as what he is going to do. Tonight was not the night. If he is going to turn on Cody Rhodes, it did not happen tonight. But it is a smart little wrinkle to add to a title match that didn't really have any sort of major story. Now, at least, it's wrapped, it's shrouded in intrigue as far as what may happen next weekend. We had two championship matches on the show tonight. The United States title on the line, LA Knight's first title defense since winning the gold at SummerSlam. And the Bloodline defending the WWE Tag Team titles here against the Street Profits, who beat DIY in a number one contenders match on last week's show. And we had the announcement earlier today that a new championship match has been added to the Bash in Berlin card next weekend. And it will be the women's tag team titles defended, Alba Fire and Isla Dawn, putting their titles on the line against Jade Cargill and Bianca Belair, the former champions. They are going to get their rematch, and that completes the five-match Triple H card that he loves putting together for these international PLEs. We have our five, and I do not expect that to go any higher than that. This is your Friday Night SmackDown review. It is August 23rd, 2024. I am the Solemn Monster. Thank you for joining me here on a Friday night. Hit that thumbs up. So the show opened with Cody Rhodes as the special guest on the Grayson Waller Effect. Waller said that everything in the WWE is about Cody Rhodes. Said the crowd started chanting Cody's name. Waller said, "These idiots don't know the real you." And he asked Cody what kind of friend he is. Cody jumped in and asked Waller if he thought that he was a bad friend. And Cody referenced Kevin Owens and said that Owens has beaten everybody on the SmackDown roster. He can beat everybody on the roster. He has beaten everybody on the roster. Well, except him. Cody said that KO has been fighting the Bloodline since before Cody even came back to the company. He said Owens has not stopped fighting, and he followed that up by saying that he has never used Kevin Owens. And he asked Waller if he could say the same thing and, you know, insinuating that Waller has been using his tag team partner, that he has been using Austin Theory. Cody called Theory Magic Mike and told him that Waller was using him and everybody is waiting for Theory to do something about it. Waller chimed in and said that they would never turn on each other, said that he prepared a little something for Cody to watch, and he directed his attention to the big screen. And they introduced a video package on Kevin Owens, and this video package wasn't that long, but this video package, you know, this reminded me of, if you think back, I want to say it was 2005, after Shawn Michaels, I believe, superkicked Hulk Hogan on July 4th. I think it was around that time, might have been the following week, but they aired a video package on Raw that week. And it was highlights of all the times that Shawn Michaels had betrayed people in his career. Going back to the barbershop incident with Marty Jannetty. And then super kicking Diesel 1 year at Survivor Series. And then there was another occasion where I think he hit X-Pac in the head with a steel chair. I don't think they showed Michael super kicking The Rock on SmackDown. But that's kind of what this reminded me of. This is somebody here who has a history of this type of behavior. He is somebody that cannot be trusted. And it started with Sami Zayn, of course, because Owens' first night in the company was with NXT. His very first night, he turned on his best friend. Okay, he attacked Sami Zayn after he won the championship and then powerbombed him on the edge of the ring. That was his first night in the company. Then they showed when he debuted on the main roster in 2015, him attacking John Cena, which I wouldn't exactly call that a betrayal, but they showed it anyway. They show Kofi Kingston. Remember when he was palling around on SmackDown a few years ago with the New Day? He was like an honorary member of the New Day. He was throwing pancakes out to the crowd. And then he turned on Kofi Kingston. And they showed Chris Jericho, which was an interesting little surprise because they have shied away from doing that. But here on the weekend of All In at Wembley Stadium, we got Chris Jericho footage here on SmackDown. And they showed the Festival of Friendship, which they had to. It's one of the all-time great segments on Raw, one of the all-time great betrayals. So they did show that. Waller said that he didn't look like a good friend to him. So that brought out Kevin Owens, who said that they're trying to convince Cody that he's going to turn on him. But Owens said, let's be honest, everybody in that video kind of had it coming, except for Kofi Kingston. He said, Kofi is a really nice guy. He didn't do anything wrong. And he owned that and apologized for that. He said, Kofi's a good dude. So Owens said that everybody knows what's going to happen here. And eventually Nick Aldis is going to come out and Nick Aldis is going to make a tag team match with the four of them. And on cue, Nick Aldis makes his way out. And Owens asked him to make a tag team match for the main event later. Aldis said it's a done deal. Main event will be Cody Rhodes and Kevin Owens against Grayson Waller and Austin Theory. And then Owens asked him, look, do I still have time? I know we got to go on with the show here, but do I have time to get in the ring and punch these guys in the face? Aldis thought about it for a second. He said, all right, make it quick. So Owens charged into the ring. We had a brawl with all four of them until Owens predictably got shoved into Cody, who had his back turned. So then the heels scurried out of the ring. Owens went to go help Cody up and told him it was just an accident, and Cody seemed to be okay with that explanation. So pretty formulaic stuff here. We've seen this type of segment before. This tease of a split, let me put Cody and KO on the side for a second. This tease of a split or you know, issues with Grayson Waller and Austin Theory has been dragging on now for months. Months and months and months. It's been going on forever, and I wish they would just do it already. Whatever is going to happen next in this story, which has not been a terribly interesting story to begin with, but I wish they would kind of move this along here. Not like this just started 2 months ago. Okay, we get the point. We have seen countless occasions where Grayson Waller has set up Austin Theory to be embarrassed or to take the bullet for him. This goes back, I think, to the beginning of the year almost. So, I mean, it's just way beyond time for them to move that along. But teasing a possible Kevin Owens turn, honestly, I think is the best way to add some real interest in this championship. Because I think people are interested in seeing the match itself. Because I think it'll be a really good match. Two popular baby faces going one-on-one. But it's an intriguing little wrinkle to throw into things here. And again, we've seen Kevin Owens do it before, and that was the whole purpose of the video package they aired, just to remind people that this man is not someone to be trusted. He's not a good person. And the minute you let your guard down, you know, you're going to pay the price for it. Is that going to happen in Berlin next weekend? We don't know. You'll have to tune in to find out. That's the point. And honestly, as far as whether or not Owens does turn, it could go either way. I'm not really leaning heavily in one camp over the other. To me, it's almost 50-50 at this point, whether or not they actually go through with it. But the one thing I will say, and I've said it the last few weeks, they need more heels on the top of the card. Not in the middle of the card, top of the card. They could really use a couple of solid heels to add to that roster right now. Kevin Owens would fit the bill. So where there is a void to be filled, Kevin Owens would be the perfect person to help fill it. Tonight was LA Knight's first title defense of the United States Championship, and it came against Santos Escobar. So LA Knight, every week he comes out, he gets a monster pop, no matter where they are. Tonight was no different, but tonight was special in this way. It was a great reaction when he came out. They were in Washington, D.C. And as he said later on in the show, he's, I think, spent the last 12 years or however many years it is living out in L.A., hence the name, living out on the West Coast. He's bi-coastal. You know, Triple H were doing commentary like he did that one year at the King of the Ring. He would say, I'm a lot of things, I'm a lot of bi things. Then that pause, and then he goes, wait, did I just say that? I don't even remember what was going on during the match. I just remember him on commentary during that match. But apparently he's a lot of bi things. LA Knight is bi-coastal. When he grew up in Hagerstown in Maryland, which is not that far. It's down the road from where they were in D.C. tonight. So I think he had family there, probably some friends. So I'm sure that was a little extra special for him being in his hometown, more or less. So as the introductions for the match began, Angel and Humberto, they pulled L.A. Knight to the floor. They attacked him before the bell. Referee Jessica Carr ejected not only Angel and Humberto, she ejected Electra Lopez as well. So now, of course, Escobar is not happy about this because he just lost his entire crew. Late in the match, Knight set up for a BFT. I don't know why this says BLT. Maybe he's fucking hungry. He set up for a BLT, but Escobar countered with a super kick, and the two battled on the middle rope until Knight pushed Escobar off, and then he did his leap, which is an impressive thing. One of these weeks, he's going to slip, and he's gonna fall flat on his face. But hey, right? Life is about taking risks. He's standing on the middle rope, and in one leap, he leaps up to the top rope, and then comes off with the diving elbow drop. Excuse me. The BFT followed, and then Knight pinned him to retain the title. A nice match. Probably 3-star level, maybe. They did just enough to keep the people happy. Escobar, he got waxed, so that's it. I mean, there's no real reason to see this again. It's on to the next, whoever that may be, which leads me to a segment that came in the back later on in the show, because he was being interviewed, LA Knight was, by Byron Saxton. And he said that he is throwing out an open challenge to anyone who wants to challenge him for the United States Championship because he's flying to Berlin. So we're getting an open challenge next week for the U.S. title. He did not say bash in Berlin. He just said Berlin. And that's the point I was making earlier about SmackDown being in Berlin next week. They didn't formally announce it, but I believe he is defending the title on the SmackDown episode next Friday. Not on the page, because it surprised me at first. At first, I thought, oh, they're going to add this match now to the Bash. But then I realized, wait, they're in Berlin for SmackDown, so they'll do it on TV next week. So that likely is where it is going to happen. And by the way, isn't it nice to have a defending champion? Isn't it nice to have the title actually defended 2 weeks in a row? It doesn't have to be defended every week, but hey, 2 weeks in a row, that's pretty good. It's a hell of a lot better than what we were getting the last 9 months. It's a welcome change. Question is, who accepts the challenge? You've got Andrade and Carmelo Hayes who are locked in a program right now that is not finished. So it's not going to be either one of them, I don't believe. Not when they're in the middle of their squabble. First name that popped in my head is Giovanni Vinci. We've got a couple of vignettes. I don't think we got one tonight, but we've had a couple of videos for him the last few weeks on TV. They're repackaging him. He's going to be re-debuting on the main roster very soon. My guess, if I had to take one guess at it, one stab at it, he walks out there to accept the open challenge in his first match back. Not an ideal situation because he'll likely lose in his first match as opposed to debuting and being built up before he loses, but that would be my best guess as far as who comes out to accept the challenge. Because I was going over in my head, who's on the SmackDown roster. It's possible they could debut somebody new from NXT, call somebody up in that spot. I don't think they're going to do that. I don't think they're going to call somebody up from NXT and fly them out to Berlin. So I'm going to go with Giovanni Vinci. They aired footage of, speaking of, Carmelo Hayes beating Andrade last week. And the brawl that took place after their match. So then we saw Hayes cutting a promo in the back, and he wasn't, like, if you think back to when he was in NXT, we would have these vignettes that they shot from a barbershop. This was not in the barbershop that we're used to seeing him in. They basically set up like a little barbershop in the back, like a little barber area. So he was cutting his promo from there. When Andrade crashed the party and he had to be held back and restrained, then he calmed down a little bit. He said what happened last week after the match was disrespectful to him and he would see him next week to set things right. And Hayes accepted his challenge. So as expected, we are getting at least one more match, probably two, because Hayes has to win one more, I believe, to even things out. Once that happens, you'll have the tiebreaker, best of five, which is at a minimum what I think we're going to get from these two. The first few matches they've had have been very good, so I'm looking forward to the rematch next week. The rubber match, I think, is inevitable between these two, which means Hayes has to win next week. Also backstage, Santos Escobar chewed out Angel and Humberto for getting ejected before his match, and he said they're of no use to him if they're not out there with him. So Apollo Crews and Baron Corbin walked up and started mocking them. You know your career is at the skids when you're being mocked by Apollo Crews and Baron Corbin. So Escobar said he would go talk to Nick Aldis so they could sort out all of this disrespect next week. And I am being told that indeed, yes, it will be on SmackDown next week, the U.S. title open challenge. Good. Good. I like having a champion who actually defends his title and shows up to work. It's very nice. We have Bianca Belair, Jade Cargill, and Naomi taking on Alba Fire, Isla Dawn, and Blair Davenport. I'm going to say it right now. Jade Cargill has the best hot tag in WWE. Simple as that. Hot tag Jade is something to see. And it's the smart way to use her in these matches. You know, when you're doing a tag match, you're doing a trios match in this case. Keep her in the ring in limited doses. Let somebody else do the selling and then build to her tagging into the match. When that crowd reaction just reaches its crescendo and the tag is made and they all go nuts, as they did here, they went nuts. Jade, when she tagged into this match and she came in, she was a house of fire. She hit a power bomb. She hit a fallaway slam. The heels fought back. Naomi tagged in and hit a crossbody off the top on Davenport and Dawn. Naomi then landed dueling draping DDTs to both women. Things broke down and they went to the floor where Bianca came flying off the top rope, took everybody out with a crossbody. Back inside, Naomi hit a split-legged moonsault on Davenport and picked up the win for her team. I thought good stuff here from all the women involved. It was nice to see Naomi get the win because she's been in a bad way, booking-wise, for the last several months. And if anybody needed that win, it was her. And I thought she looked good in the match, too. But she really needed that win. Bianca and Jade, they are going, as I mentioned earlier, to Berlin next Saturday on the PLE. And they will be challenging for the women's tag team titles. And, I mean, I'm doing my predictions on the podcast tomorrow, but, I mean, I'll give this one away. There is no reason to think that Bianca and Jade are not going to win this match. I mean, I don't expect anything different than that. Now, they aired a video. This may have been, honestly, my favorite part of the night. They aired a video narrated by Natalia for the Bash in Berlin. Only it wasn't focused so much on the actual Bash in Berlin card. What it was focused on was WWE's history in Berlin, in Germany, going all the way back to 1996. And they had highlights from the WWF tour that year of Berlin, and it was mostly, in this footage, video of the best there is, the best there was, and the best there ever will be. Bret the Hitman Hart, who actually was very popular in Germany back then. Bret, for whatever reason, more than most, even when business was not necessarily great, people went crazy for Bret when they went to Europe. Whenever he was on these European tours, whether it was Germany, Italy, France, Spain. He was always very popular, but in Germany in particular, again, I don't know what it was, but he got a lot of fan mail. He would go over there and he was just treated like a rock star. So it was quite appropriate that they had the footage of Brett here in this segment. So after that, she's narrating over footage from the March 3rd, 1997 episode of Raw, which was a taped show, and it included footage from their trip to Berlin. On that show, we had the finals of the tournament to crown the first ever European champion. This is when they first introduced that title. In the finals of the tournament, we had Owen Hart and the British Bulldog. So I saw this. I mean, I just seeing Owen on TV. How often have they showed Owen Hart footage on WWE television? I mean, it's been years. They just don't do it. And certainly under Vince, they just stayed away from it. It was totally hands off. So it was nice, you know, to see Owen on TV and in a match that was actually excellent. The match, if you never saw the match between Owen and Davey Boy, it was a great match. It was a great final in that tournament. Bulldog won. He became the first ever European champion. So a fantastic match, but it was nice to see the footage. It's sad, obviously, that, you know, both men are not around anymore, but just a fantastic match. All of this was to build for how big it is for Berlin to be getting its first ever PLE. It was strange seeing all the old and they dedicated a good chunk of time to it, seeing all the old footage and not only that, but hearing all the WWF mentions. They had a clip of a fan who was at one of the shows talking, and he said WWF, and they didn't edit it out. There was commentary mentioning WWF. Again, in the past, they would have edited that or dubbed it out, but they didn't. Again, no complaints out of me. I thought it was great. I enjoyed watching the old footage here. I wish they would do a classic segment like this, honestly, on the show every week. It doesn't have to be as long as this, but I never understood, and I know it doesn't make them as much money, which is why it's not a priority for them. But even when they had the network, when the network first started, occasionally they might do a quick segment to promote the classics, but they really didn't. And you have your entire video library, and think of all the libraries of content they've acquired, not only their own, all the different promotions they've paid to bring into their library. And now it's on Peacock. And from all the things I've heard over the years, that content, nobody watches it. Well, part of the reason maybe nobody watches it and pays attention to it is the fact that you don't promote it. I understand it doesn't have to be priority number one, but would it be difficult to devote 30 seconds, 60 seconds to throw up highlights of a match or a big event, you know, 25 years ago this week, 30 years ago this week? And then just have a little advert that goes up promoting the fact that you could, you know, find all this classic content in the vault on Peacock, where all of it is accessible. They don't talk about it. It's all just current shit. Like on YouTube, they have a new vault channel, which is great. But it would be nice if on TV they showed some love, I think, to the classics. And then maybe you would have more people who were like, hey, you know what? I want to check that out. I want to check that promo out. I want to check that match out. So I'd like to see them do that on a weekly basis. Solo Sikoa was out to the ring with Tama Tonga, Tongaloa, and Jacob Fatu, who was dressed to wrestle but still in his walking boot. Solo said that he had a few items to address. Item number one, he said the OTC is D-O-N-E. It is done. Item number two, whether it's Cody Rhodes or whether it's Kevin Owens, whoever wins the championship, it doesn't matter because he's got next. He said he's going to bring the title back to his family. No, you're not. No, you're not. Item number three, since he's going to be the undisputed WWE champion, I thought, him focusing on the word undisputed, I thought maybe he was going to say we need to reunify the tag team titles, and maybe that was going to be their way of bringing Jey Uso back into things. Because remember, Jey and Sammy are supposed to get a tag team title match soon, whenever Sammy comes back against the Judgment Day. He didn't go in that direction, though. He said, since I'm going to be the undisputed WWE champion, there's something wrong with the tag team titles. He said, Jacob Fatu, step up. So Jacob's got, you know, one half of the tag belts. He steps up. He goes, Jacob, give me your title. Fatu kind of looks at him and he takes the title off his shoulder. He goes to hand it to him. He goes, as a matter of fact, don't give it to me. Give it to Tonga Loa. Tonga Loa was dressed to wrestle. That should have been the first sign that something was going down here. And he wasn't in a suit this week. He was actually dressed for combat. But the funniest part, the best part of this entire segment, you know, I've said that Tonga Loa has been good so far for comic relief since WWE brought him in, and really nothing more than that. As soon as Solo Sikoa told him, give your title to Tonga Loa, the crowd chanted, you can't wrestle. Oh my goodness. Poor Tonga Loa. Poor Tonga Loa. Getting it even from the fans in the building. It's bad enough he gets it from people like me online, but now he gets it from the people in the arena as well. You can't wrestle, from the people in Washington, D.C. Well, maybe he can't wrestle, but now he's one half of the tag team champion. Because Jacob Fatu surrendered his title to Tonga Loa. Solo told Fatu, you can't be a champion if you're going to be my personal enforcer. So he got a promotion, basically. He's now his personal bodyguard. Solo gave him a hug. Jacob didn't hug him back, but as he was being hugged, you could hear him screaming, I love you, Solo! I love you, Solo! And I thought, thank you, Jacob. That's very kind of you. So B-Fab and the Street Profits interrupted. Montez Ford called them Bloodline version 867-5309. Great song. Is that Tommy Two-Tone? Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. When your schedule is packed and you've got work to do, kids to drive to soccer practice, or something that needs fixing for your parents or your in-laws, it can be hard to make time for the things that you really care about. You know, for me, it's that cardio workout at the gym. Sometimes the day gets away from me, I don't get it in, I'm all pissed off, because for me, that's non-negotiable. I have to get that in. But sometimes there just aren't enough hours in the day. Even the things that make us happy, it can be tough to make time for them. When you feel like you have no time for yourself, non-negotiables like that, or like therapy, well, they become more important than ever. Therapy can do incredible things for you. It can help you understand yourself better, better understand the things that may be bothering you, identifying ways to try to fix them. It's okay to ask for help. I know some people, you know, for some of them, that's still a taboo thing. The idea of therapy or asking someone for help, you think you can just figure it out on your own. You're fooling yourself. It's okay to admit that you don't always have all the answers. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be suited to your schedule. Just fill out a short questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and rest easy knowing that you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Never skip a therapy day with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Solomonster today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Solomonster. And said that Fatu looked all happy because he got a promotion. Angelo Dawkins said that it was time for a demotion because they were coming to take those tag team championships. And that led into the tag team title match with the Bloodline, Tama Tonga and Tonga Loa, defending their titles against the Street Profits. Boy, we got a gifted membership drive going on right now in the chat. I'm trying to keep track of all this. We had 5 from Bobby. Then we got 5 from Uffman. Then we got 5 from Fire Panda, and we got 5 more from David Thiering, so we are up to 20. 20 new channel map. I think you all love Solo. We got a lot of love for Solo in this chat. Put those fingers up. That's right. The real tribal chief. I love you, Solo. So we got our tag team title match here. Tongaloa was working over Montez Ford after a commercial break. He went for some kind of a pop-up move. Montez Ford countered with a DDT. Dawkins got the hot tag outside the ring. He shoulder blocked both Gorillas of Destiny into the barricade. And Ford followed that up with his giant leap over the ring post. He barely cleared it. It seemed like he actually caught the ring post on his way out over it, but wiped out the heels on the floor. Jacob Fatu, then, who was at ringside for this match, along with Solo. Jacob Fatu ran over, and he super kicked both Street Profits with the walking boot. He used his walking boot foot. Tama Tonga then threw Dawkins into the ring, hit his flatliner finish, and then he pinned him to retain the titles. The match was okay. You know, they heated the Street Profits back up a little bit over the last few weeks just to beat them. But it was not without interference from Fatu. So we'll see if we get another round. I suspect we will. A round two between the Profits and the Bloodline. After the match, the Bloodline continued to work them over when Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa, they ran out. Bloodline, though, got the better of them with Fatu hitting his pop-up Samoan drop on Tommaso Ciampa. Solo Sikoa then hit the Samoan spike to Johnny Gargano, picked up Tommaso Ciampa, hit him with a Samoan spike as well, and the Bloodline stood tall to end the segment. DIY running out was a surprise. I just thought the way things ended with them last time, they were going to be stuck in purgatory for a while. Maybe we wouldn't see them for a while. So, I mean, it was good that they were out there. Of course, they got laid out. Both of them got laid out, so that wasn't great for them. So I wouldn't say they came out of this looking like roses, but maybe we're headed for a three-way. I think that's possible. We get a three-way match at some point, DIY, Street Profits, and the Bloodline for the tag team titles. It'll be very interesting because, again, there's a lot of speculation about the Lucha Brothers. And I think the fact that they are not in that Trios title match on Sunday at All In is all the indication you need that they're gone, or at least Tony Khan expects them to be gone, because you've got Pac teaming with the Blackpool Combat Club instead of doing Death Triangle. So, I mean, I think it's pretty clear what's going on here. They're going to come in. Do they go to NXT first? If not, they could go to the main roster. If they end up on SmackDown, you could have the Lucha Bros potentially in the next few months thrown into the mix here, which would make things very interesting. But my guess is they still make a stop in NXT before they hit the main roster. But keep them in mind because they're likely on their way in these next couple of months as well. That would certainly make the tag division a little more interesting. So with the Bloodline, we've got the Freebird rule going on where it doesn't matter which member of the Bloodline, I guess it's legal that any combination of them can hold the tag team titles. I don't
Look,
know.
Everyone, it's Samoa Bro.
Hey, Peter, thank you for the $20. I don't know what's going on with Jacob Fatu. I don't know why he's still out there in the walking boot. I had people yelling at me coming out of SummerSlam. Oh, you're a mark. You thought he was hurt. Ha, ha, ha. Clearly, he's not. If he's hurt, he's not that hurt. But I do wonder if the walking boot is on and what they did tonight where, you know, you're going to surrender your title to Tongaloa. You know, was that the plan all along? Or are they trying to cover for an injury that he is not fully cleared from? Because he's out there throwing super kicks. He's doing his pop-up Samoan drop. He did not go to the top rope because I don't think that would be wise to do anything off the top rope in a walking boot. But I do wonder if, again, you know, he suffered a minor injury. They don't want to make it worse, but he's good to do basic stuff. And it's just a precautionary thing. But you see, you can't say something like that without people jumping down your throat. But yet he's walking out there every week in a walking boot, and I'm the idiot. So whatever it is, I guess we'll find out soon enough. But the people throughout Solo's promo, and even at the end here, they wanted Roman Reigns. They chanted for Roman Reigns. They chanted OTC. There was no Roman Reigns. Interesting note, I mentioned last week that Roman is next advertised for that first SmackDown on USA Network on September 13th. And I figured that might be the night maybe we get the first Roman Reigns match, try to pop a big number on that first SmackDown back on USA. Roman has since been removed from the advertising on WWE.com. His name is no longer listed among the advertised talents for that show. Now, I believe the website for the Climate Pledge Arena, where the show is emanating, does still have his name on there, but the most up-to-date current listing of talent for that SmackDown no longer has Roman Reigns' name on there. We'll see if that changes. It could change. We'll see if that changes, but that was a noticeable change this week, because last week his name was there, now it's not. Shout out to Superman Bassfisher, who became a super member. I don't know what I'm saying. Thank you, by the way, for all of the gifted memberships. It's hard to keep track of everything here, but I do see it. I do see all of you. Thank you. Hurt his toe? Yeah, maybe Jacob Fatu stubbed his toe. No, when he hit the table at SummerSlam, it was his shin that smacked the table. It was not his toe. But it would be funny if he just stubbed his toe and, you know, he's going around in a walking boot just in case. You know, let the toe heal. They had the progressive match flow. This week, it was a vignette showcasing Meechan to promote her street fight with Nia Jax next week for the Women's Championship. Backstage, Tiffany Stratton was with Pretty Deadly, who were shown gluing pink diamonds onto Nia Jax's crown, which was damaged last week by Meechan. Nia then showed up, and she was in a foul mood. I like the idea of Pretty Deadly still being involved in this little motley crew. The musical segment last week was a misfire. I did not like that. But I think in segments like this in the back, you know, you see Tiffany hanging out with them. Nia comes in. She's sort of, not amused by their shenanigans. I mean, I think this could work, you know, if they want to do more segments with these four. Just don't do any musical bits in the ring, and we should be okay. Nothing of any real note was said. Nia basically said, "Fix my crown." So then you could hear Chelsea Green's voice. She's having a conversation with Piper Niven. And the camera pans over, and just around on the other side of the wall, they're having a conversation that they don't realize that Nia Jax is standing on the other side of the wall and can hear everything they're saying. So Nia is standing there, and she's eavesdropping on them as they're talking about the possibility of Tiffany Stratton cashing in her money in the bank next week after Nia's match with Meechan. So then Nia pops out from around the corner, and Chelsea realizes that Nia heard everything she said. And again, Nia said she was in no mood tonight. I think it's smart to plant the seed for a possible cash-in next week, and to do it in a way where it was nothing that Tiffany said. Tiffany wasn't even there, right? It was somebody else planting those ideas in Nia's head, which in turn will make her more paranoid when she has her match with Meechan next week. So that I liked, but let's be honest here again. All of this, we're just biding time. We're biding time for the return of the queen, the other queen, which we know is coming. It may not be next month. It may not even be in October, although I'd be kind of surprised if she wasn't back by then. But we know she's coming back, and when she does, we're going to get the inevitable Charlotte and Nia feud for the women's championship. So in the meantime, you throw somebody like Meechan out there. Maybe even Naomi gets a shot. But we know what this is all building to. The main event was Cody Rhodes and Kevin Owens against Austin Theory and Grayson Waller. This was, as you might expect, replete with moments where they wanted you to think that there might be a falling out, that there might be a miscommunication between Cody and KO. Can they coexist? There might be some moments like that here in this match. Or that Owens might just flat out turn on him, but that's all they were. They were teases. Nothing more than that. Owens got a hot tag, to Cody, and Cody unleashed on Grayson Waller with a disaster kick. Waller went to the outside. Cody tried to run the ropes, but Theory cut him off. Waller got his rolling flatliner for a two count. When it came time for Cody to try for a tag, Theory cut him off. Waller tagged in. Cody took care of the heels, though, and crawled towards Kevin Owens. The way they did this, and the way they shot this, and you have Cody doing the slow crawl, you know, towards his corner. He's in desperate, dire need of making the tag. This was meant to invoke, I mean, if you're a longtime wrestling fan, you remember Hogan and Sid in 92 on Saturday night's main event. They were tag team partners. Hogan crawling towards the corner. He sees Sid, reaches for the tag. Sid drops down off the apron. And we've seen other versions of that over the years. That's the earliest version of that that I can remember as a younger wrestling fan. And that's what they were going for here. Is Owens going to pull his hand back? Is Owens going to drop down from the apron and not give Cody the tag? He did give him the tag. And as soon as he gave him the tag, Owens dropped down to the floor and he ran around. He clotheslined Waller and he clotheslined Theory. Then came a pair of running sentons to each man. Crowd was all fired up. Back inside, Owens landed a cannonball and a swanton bomb on Grayson Waller. Theory, though, broke up a pin attempt. Cody hit a crossroads on Theory, and then Owens followed that with a pop-up powerbomb on Grayson Waller for the win. Theory and Waller, they serve their purpose on this show. All they do is lose, but in this case, their goal with them, in the opening segment, was to try to create tension between the two top babyfaces and then do the job for them in the main event, and that's what they did. But again, that's all they do. That's all they do is go out there and lose. As far as the whole dynamic between the two of them, they've been teasing a split for months now. We know it's coming. Clearly, they're teasing future babyface Austin Theory, which, you know, for his sake, I hope it works, but I can't exactly sit here and tell you that there's all these new layers to this character that, you know, didn't exist before and now they do. They really don't. I mean, Austin Theory is more or less the same person he was a year ago or 2 years ago. So if they do the babyface turn, yeah, maybe against Grayson Waller, he'll be over as a babyface, but I don't know. I don't have high hopes that they're going to all of a sudden have all this great luck and success with him as a babyface if they turn him, unless they plan on maybe eventually doing something with, you know, him and Gargano and all those guys, you know, because they were all part of the way back in NXT. But that would be a step backwards for him. You know, that was a comedy gimmick. So, I mean, that's not something at this point I think would be a real answer for him. He's really good. Like, again, you watch him in the ring, he's a very capable, very good in-ring worker. And he is still very young, and he's got a good look. He seems to have most of the tools that you would need to become a big star. But there's still something missing with him. So for his sake, when the split finally happens, I hope that he's able to find within him whatever that is. Or maybe under, you know, Triple H now, as opposed to when Vince was around a few years ago, he'll have a different approach or a different idea for him. I mean, he was like Vince's pet project, though. He was pushed harder under Vince than he has been under Triple H. But maybe they could come up with some kind of an idea for him. Try to bring something out of him that I'm just not seeing in him right now. Now, I was waiting to see what might happen in the post-match. And so were Cody Rhodes and Kevin Owens, who had to stand there while the announcers ran down all the matches on the Bash in Berlin card next Saturday, one by one. Thankfully, it's not a very long card. So once they were done with that, they cut back to the ring. And Owens had the WWE title in his hands. And he's looking at Cody. And Owens storms towards him with the title in his hands like he's going to blast him with it. But instead he hands him the championship. Probably gave everybody in the crowd a heart attack. But he hands him the title instead, and they went off the air with the two of them celebrating. Now that would have been something. if he would have clobbered him with that belt. But more intriguing, I think, to hold off another week, let people think about it, let people wonder if the turn might come in Berlin. Tonight was all about planting the seeds of doubt about Kevin Owens. Will he or won't he? That was the whole purpose of the video they aired earlier in the show, showing all the betrayals. For me, again, it's 50-50. I could see it going either way. If I had to venture a guess, are they going to turn him or not? I'm going to say no. But they do need more heels. And it's not like Owens, if you keep him as a babyface, once this match happens and he loses, it's not as if he's got a plethora of heels lined up to work with. You know, we've already seen him with Waller and Theory and LA Knight's a babyface. You know, AJ, I don't know what's going on with AJ Styles. We haven't seen him in a while. Hayes is involved in something right now with Andrade. You've got Vinci, who's about to debut. Maybe they could do something with Owens and Vinci, which would almost feel beneath Owens at this point. You know, the whole thing with possibly turning Owens heel. If Owens doesn't turn heel, but Randy Orton does, because Randy Orton, once he gets done with Gunther at Bash in Berlin, he's going to venture back to SmackDown, which is his brand. I mean, that's really where he belongs. If Owens stays babyface and doesn't go heel, but Orton does eventually, Owens can work with him. You know, so maybe it's not him, but it's Randy, in fact, who ends up turning against Cody, you know, before they are ready to pursue that story. And so we could end up with something with Owens and Randy, and then once Randy beats him, Randy then gets Cody, and they kind of move forward with that story. I'll be honest with you. I personally would not mind Owens going heel and winning the championship from Cody Rhodes. And not necessarily in Berlin next weekend, if they wanted to do two matches and then have the title change at Bad Blood in Atlanta. I wouldn't mind that at all. Under normal circumstances, where I didn't already see there being somebody else waiting in the wings for this spot, under normal circumstances, I would not mind that at all. But I've got the same idea in mind for Randy Orton, where Cody drops the title to him and then wins it back from him a few months later, because that's what I would do. You know, if the Orton thing comes to pass, I would have Randy Orton beat him and win the championship, win number 15, and then drop it back to Cody, maybe even at WrestleMania. But you can't do that with Kevin Owens if you're going to turn around and do the exact same thing with Randy Orton. It's got to be one or the other. And of the two, Orton is the one I would go with, because Orton it's the richer story there with him and Cody. So if you're going to pick one over the other, you got to go with Randy Orton in that spot. In any other situation, though, I wouldn't mind Kevin Owens turning heel and taking the title for a few months. The only other time on the main roster all these years, almost a decade now, he's been on Raw and SmackDown, that he has held a world championship. It technically wasn't a world title. It was a universal title, but it was the universal title. And then he got beat by Goldberg, and ever since then, he has not had a world championship since. It does feel like he's overdue for a run. But with Randy waiting in the wings, I just don't think the timing really makes sense. Good problem to have, though, because can't go wrong with either one of those guys. Like I said, though, overall, a pretty average episode, I would say, of SmackDown. Nothing terribly exciting, but nothing bad. They did what they had to do as far as the Berlin stuff. Let's take a look at the Twitter poll. What did you think of SmackDown from Washington, D.C.? 54% thumbs up, 28% thumbs in the middle, 18% thumbs down. That's a softer number than usual for these WWE shows, but again, deservedly so. You know, it's pretty average stuff, I would say. We got all the hot takes here in the chat, I see. Everyone's got a different opinion on what direction to go in with Cody Rhodes. Who should he wrestle? Should he drop the title? Should he hold the title until WrestleMania? Should he have a multi-year run with the championship? I don't want to see that. We've already had a multi-year run with the championship. We don't need that back-to-back. It's a little more interesting if he drops the belt to the right person and then has to chase to get it back. There's nothing wrong with that. Absolutely nothing wrong with doing that. As I say, there is nothing wrong with switching the title back and forth a few times. In the right circumstance, in the right feud, you don't have to have year-long, two-year-long title runs with everyone. I think people have gotten so used to that with Roman Reigns and Logan Paul and Gunther that they think that's just the norm now, that everybody has to be the champion for fucking 9 months, 12 months, 18 months. If everybody does that, it gets fucking boring. Okay, so you can't do that. All right, let's take a look at your messages here. I want to hear from you guys and see what you have to say about tonight's show. So let's get to it, and let us begin with Fire Panda. If a new wrestling fan asked you what made Bray Wyatt special, which promo or match or entrance would you show them? Yeah, for those who don't know, Bray Wyatt passed away 1 year ago tomorrow at the age of 36. So it's been a year. What I would show someone that I thought was special, the first thing that comes to mind, well, there's a few things that come to mind. But the first thing that comes to mind for me, you talk about entrances, is the first entrance he ever made as The Fiend at SummerSlam for the match with Finn Balor. That first Fiend entrance was tremendous. It was like an experience. So that would be one. Match-wise, honestly, any of the matches between The Shield and the Wyatt family, but especially that first one at Elimination Chamber. I mean, people were going crazy for it before they even touched. The atmosphere for that match was incredible. And really, anytime The Shield and the Wyatts got in the ring or in the same vicinity, it was a special feeling. So that would be another one. As far as moments, one moment that I always think of is, it was that episode of Raw. I want to say it was a tag team match. It was Roman Reigns and Bray Wyatt as partners. Usually they were enemies, but in this case they were partners, and they took on, I want to say it was Sheamus and Alberto Del Dipshit. And it's that final parting shot at the end of that match where Bray, I think he's covering Del Rio, and Roman, you see Roman Reigns coming in, because Sheamus, you can't see Sheamus, but I guess he's getting in the ring. Roman sees him though, and Roman cuts him off with a spear. As Roman is coming in for a spear, Bray just kind of points up, like he gives like the gun sign to Sheamus. Almost like he's pointing for Roman, like, yeah, you're dead, son. And Roman spears Sheamus, and I just thought that was such a great shot and such a great moment there. And it was in that moment that I really did feel like Roman and Bray were going to be, to this generation, what Cena and Orton were to the generation that came right before them. What Cena and Orton was in that era of WWE, it really felt like Roman and Bray were going to be that in that current era. And it didn't work out that way. I mean, for Roman it did, not for Bray. But that was just a cool as shit moment. So I always think of that as well. So yeah, those would be the moments that I would single out. Josh Carlos, 98. Where do you rank the Bret and Owen classics from WrestleMania 10 and Cage Match in WWE history? Where I rank them is Bret and Owen is one of the best matches that I've seen in WWE history. I don't have it as the best, but it's pretty high up on the list. As is the cage match. I like the cage match more than the WrestleMania match. The cage match is the best cage match I've ever seen. Not counting Hell in a Cell. The best, my favorite steel cage match is that match. So to answer your question, they rank pretty damn high for me. No Strings Podcast. Went to the DC show tonight with the fellas. Hot crowd. U.S. champion LA Knight is currently my favorite for sure. Well, again, he had that hometown fan support tonight, which was very cool to see. WWE Wrestling and Gaming with a super chat. What was John Cena's best year? Oof. John Cena's best year. 2015. I think 2015 would be it. 2015 is where he had the U.S. title Open Challenge, which was a hell of a lot of fun. 2015 is where he also had those great matches with Seth Rollins. So, for those two things alone. But also, he had some great matches with Kevin Owens. That's when Owens got called up to the main roster. So, between the Owens feud, the Rollins program, and the U.S. title Open Challenge, I give it to 2015. And, oh, how could I forget? Triple Threat, Royal Rumble. Cena, Lesnar, Rollins. Tremendous triple threat match. That was a great match. David Thiering with the $50 Gunthar bomb from earlier tonight. Thank you again, David. I know David is still with us. David, thank you very much. Always love seeing the big donos, the big bombs come in. David gets the bomb for tonight. But yeah, again, the House of Glory show coming up in Chicago in T-minus 2 weeks now. Thursday, September 5th, Logan Square Auditorium. We got some big matches on that card, and I will be there. I will be there in person. I hope you are too. If so, I'll get to see some of you guys there. Always love seeing the Sound Off family in full force. Hey, Raph, thank you for the $2. Very impressed, he says, with Rhonda's apology seemed genuine. Well, you never know with these things, but better late than never, I suppose. That's in regards to her 2 o'clock in the morning apology on social media for putting out a video many years ago, a conspiracy theory video in regards to the Sandy Hook massacre, which has been dogging her for years and years, but she had a Reddit AMA the other day. She has a book out. She did an AMA on Reddit, and every comment in there was just beating her up about the Sandy Hook, and rightfully so, beating her up about the Sandy Hook stuff. So now, 11 years later, we get the apology. And I say we, not for me, but if you were someone who was directly affected by that tragedy, or if a family member or a friend was hurt or killed in that tragedy, and you know, you saw stuff like that online, that would really piss me off. And it's too bad it came 11 years too late. You never really know what's in someone's heart when they make one of those long apologies like that, but I certainly hope she was sincere. That's all I can say. Power Spying Games. I'll be going to the all-in welcome party at Box Park, Wembley, later today. Last year's one was apparently a disaster, hoping that this year will be better. Well, why was it a disaster? Was it just disorganized? Or I was not there, so I don't know what happened with the party last year. Was it like Fanatics Fest this year, which apparently was also a disaster for some people? Mr. Rod, thank you for the 20. Happy Friday to you and everybody in the chat. Average show tonight, but what is your excitement level for All In on Sunday? I'm excited. The top matches, I'm all geared up for the top matches. The rest of the card, like the body of the card, I think it's okay. But like the key matches on the card, the main event, the MJF match, the women's title match, that I'm excited for. Even the coffin match, I think, is going to be really fun. The tag team title match, I don't give two shits about. That is the match I am least looking forward to on the entire show. I think they've done a piss poor job with that. But overall, I'm excited. And the Casino Gauntlet as well. So I think we're going to get some surprises. I know we're going to get some surprises in that match because It's all anybody's been talking about. Super Pony, what does Kevin Owens do after he loses to Cody? Might have a second match with Cody. Power Spy and Games. Also, anyone going to All In tomorrow, plan your journey correctly. Clashes with Notting Hill Carnival, which always falls around this time of year. Jerome Eugenio, even when DIY does not have a match, they still come out looking like losers. Prince Vegeta says, buy, sell, and rent on these three WrestleMania main events. Cody versus Roman at 40, Rock against Austin at 17, and Triple H, HBK, Benoit at 20. I got that recency bias with this year. I really had a lot of fun with this year's main event. I might still be inclined, though, to go Rock Austin at 17. Rock Austin at 17 is what I'll buy on. I will rent on Cody and Roman, and I will sell on the triple threat from WrestleMania 20. Jeremy Rose, top five wrestling entrance music currently. Swerve, Roman, Jey Uso, MJF, and Cody. Any that I did not mention that you like to add? Of the current talents, well, Swerve is great. Roman has a badass theme. Cody's Kingdom theme is great. Actually, got a theme music question that I'm going to include in the next podcast in the mailbag. I mean, there's some good music. I'm just trying to think of. I mean, we're talking top of the line ones. I like Will Ospreay's theme, so I would add Ospreay to that list. I'll have to give that some more thought about who else I think should be in the top five. Tyler Hansen, how would you book Bianca versus Rhea storyline-wise if in a perfect world they were to meet at WrestleMania 41? Two women who I think were looked at, and I think still are, although Bianca's been sort of pushed to the back burner, it feels like. I think, and part of that, I think, is just, you know, whatever this story is going to be eventually with her and Jade, it's being done as a way to help get Jade over more than anything. Bianca was already over. So this is really being done more, I think, to help get Jade more established. And then eventually the two of them, we know they'll wrestle at some point. But Bianca and Rhea, I think, they were the final two in that Royal Rumble. I want to say it was 2021. And you felt it then, like, these are the two women that this division is going to be built around for the next 5 to 10 years. And I still think that's the case. So I think it just boils down to that more than anything. These are the two women who are the backbone of that women's division in terms of this next generation of talent. So I'm not talking about the Charlotte Flairs and the Becky Lynches and the Baileys, because they've been around already for a number of years. I mean, it's hard to believe, but like Charlotte and Becky and Bailey and people like that, I mean, they're almost a decade in now. So I think it's, you know, two women who are sort of the queen bee of the women's division. Who's the better of the two? Who's the better? Who's the stronger? Because they're also both two powerhouses, right? Bianca is very strong. And Rhea's no slouch herself. So then you have that dynamic as well. Who's the better one? Who's the stronger one of the two? I don't think you really need much more than that, honestly. You don't need a dirty dom or anything, any kind of soap opera bullshit to get people interested in seeing that match. Smoking Dried Chicken. Here's a bold choice. Jacob Fatu accepts LA Knight's open challenge. Just what we need. More gold in the bloodline. No thank you. Peter Quartieri. I acknowledge you, Solo. Thank you, Peter. Thank you, Peter. He acknowledges me, Solo. The learning sicko, Dr. Bropio. For the wrong reason, somehow Tongaloa got over. You get over. Whether it's the right reasons or the wrong reasons. I'm telling you, man, he could be the Shockmaster of our generation. RDS Harry dream match, Mr. Perfect against Kurt Angle. Who wins? Love them both. Got to go Kurt Angle, though. Especially if we're talking like 2002, 2003 wrestling machine Kurt Angle. I mean, it's a no contest there. But it would be a great match, though. Smoking Dried Chicken, I hope Mercedes and Britt get jiggy with it on Sunday. Bobby's World with a $22 super chat. So riding in the van with the family, I am playing music and Jimmy Uso song plays. My girlfriend says, I can't believe they sampled Inspector Gadget for this song. I may need time to recover from this one. You know, now that I think about it, I guess I can kind of hear that a little bit. Maybe I have to listen back to it again. Maybe. I might hear that a little bit. A little bit of Inspector Gadget in there. Smoking Dried Chicken. He says he loves Isla Dawn. She's a beautiful Scottish carrot cake. Well, all right then. The Juliet says, do you think Ricochet has a role in MJF and Ospreay? No, I don't. I think that he will be in the Casino Gauntlet. Tyler Hansen with the 10. Being an amateur video game designer and horror fan, I'm curious about a favorite horror game or film of yours in recent years. Long Legs and In a Violent Nature caught my eye this year. I'm not familiar with Long Legs, but I've heard a lot of good things about In a Violent Nature. I have not seen it still, but I would like to. As far as like a horror game, I haven't really played any horror games recently. Although I know that there is there's a new Halloween game. It's like a 16-bit game that's either out or coming out soon. But yeah, In a Violent Nature is something I definitely plan on seeing. There was a movie that I saw, it was either earlier this year or late last year, and I can't remember what it was called now, but it was a horror movie. It was a recent horror movie that I liked. I can't remember the name of it, though. It involved aliens, like alien creatures. Oh my gosh. I remember they got into this woman's house and she killed one and it was kind of laying on the floor and she kind of covered it up. Like I could see the scenes in my head. I don't remember the name of it. This was many months ago. Maybe somebody in the chat will recognize what I'm talking about. The Real CS, a year already, damn. Hashtag rest in peace, Bray. Oofman Entertainment, Brett versus Owen cage match. At SummerSlam 94, whispers, watch along. No one will save you. Okay, that sounds familiar. I think that might have been it. No one will save you. Yes, I believe. Was that like a Netflix movie, I think? Yeah, I saw that. No one will save you. Smoking Dried Chicken, say his name 3 times and he appears. I believe in Joe Orange, Beetlejuice, 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 Cassidy, Hendry. Very good. You can see Joe Hendry on September 29th when we bring him into House of Glory. Perhaps by then he will be the NXT champion. Because I know he's going to be challenging Ethan Page soon for the title. Wouldn't that be something? If we brought the NXT champion into HOG, it could very well happen. Smoking Dried Chicken, I'll bet a bag of crackers for Chad Gable to get the win on Monday. I'm not saying it's impossible. I'm just saying the odds are against it. That they would beat Uncle Howdy in his first match. It wouldn't shock me. It would mildly surprise me if Howdy lost that match. But there are ways where American Made can get involved and can cost him the match. So it's at least possible. Power Spying Games. Yes, the 2023 welcome party was badly organized. It always comes down to organization with these events. Rojo Bear, I hope the coffin is made of glass. Real glass. Has to be real glass. Near says, you're the man. Pray for peace in the Middle East. Always, man. And Justin G, sad attempt to stall. Oh, I haven't even checked the likes. Where are we at? I haven't even checked. 313, that's pathetic. You let me down. You let me down. But thank you for the super chats. Some good questions in there. I appreciate it. Sound off 876, likely up tomorrow at some point, a day early, because of All In on Sunday. It starts at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, so no time to do a podcast on Sunday. So at some point tomorrow, it should pop up in your feed. That will have my All In predictions and my Bash in Berlin predictions, because that show is next Saturday, where I usually do my show on Sunday. So we got to get the predictions up this weekend. So keep an eye out for that. And, of course, leave a like and a comment here as you head on out. Next time I am with you live is going to be on Monday night. That will be for the Raw post show back here on the channel next week. But, of course, All In on Sunday, big day. Whenever the pay-per-view ends, come on back here and I will be live for the full All In recap for all of the excitement. J.R. Vacher says, go see Alien Romulus. Yeah, I got a lot of positive feedback on that as well, that I should see that movie. I have to first go back and see Aliens. I saw the original. I never saw the sequel. I don't know why, but I feel like I need to see the sequel. Because everything that I've heard is that Romulus takes place between the first and the second one, if I'm understanding that correctly. So I want to make sure that I at least see the first two before I see this one. I did not see Prometheus. I did not see any of the other Alien films. I kind of feel like if I just stick to the first two and then this new one, that that probably is the only trilogy that I need. I don't need to see Alien. Now people are telling me I don't need to see Aliens. Well, maybe I would like to see Aliens. Are you telling me it's not a good movie? I shouldn't see it? I thought that was one of the better sequels in Hollywood. Power Spying Games, favorite Metallica song. I like Fade to Black. There's a bunch of songs I like. I got to go Enter Sandman, though. I mean, I always associate it with the Sandman entrance, and it's just a lot of fun. Kind of special to me. But I think I mentioned The Unforgiven. Somebody asked me a question about Metallica a while ago. I think I mentioned The Unforgiven. Are you going to be angry at me if I mention Saint Anger? Am I going to be banished for saying Saint Anger, which I didn't think was all that bad? I'm not talking about the album, just, you know, the song. And Uffman says, sorry, Patricia. Oh, poor Patricia. I'm telling you, man, she's long gone. After that discussion that day, she was gone before she was ever here. The Winston slip, know your enemy or burn it to the ground. Burn it to the ground, man. Burn it to the ground. Yeah, see, I agree with Barry. Saint Anger was a great theme for SummerSlam back in 2003. I thought it fit. All right, be well. Stay safe. Thank you for all the love. Appreciate it. All the gifted memberships, too. It's very cool. Thank you. I hope you guys who are new channel members will enjoy your stay and perhaps will renew, because they expire in 30 days. There's a time limit on gifted memberships. But I do appreciate it. So I will see you guys back here for Sunday, All In, and then Raw on Monday night. Till then, take care, guys.